Well, that's loading. Our next presenter is Ms. Angela Reckonwald. Angela is an MPH, the Director of Research and Quality at Nurses for Newborns since summer of 2011. She has over 17 years of public health and clinical evaluation experience. She has served in academic hospital and community settings oriented toward improving public health policy, clinical health care experiences, and intervention development and implementation. Her areas of research interest and experience include outcomes, evaluation, long-term quality of life implications, policy impact, and clinical effectiveness. I now present you, Angela.
So, as Ms. Plus, as I've learned to lovingly call her, has said, I'm Angie Reckonwald. I'm the Director of Research and Quality for Nurses for Newborns, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about a community-based organization, my organization, and an academic partnership that was successful, and some of the good, bad, and ugly along the way. So we'll go ahead and go down. I have no disclosures, unfortunately. I'm open to some. If anybody has any financials for me. So I'm going to start with a little bit of information about our background. Nurses for Newborns is a community-based organization. It was founded as a community member's response to a community need, very, very similar to the previous presenters. We saw babies dying and being maltreated and neglected in our area, and it was a nurse who kept seeing these babies come back to the hospital for things that they didn't need to be there for, and so she started this organization. So we serve as a safety net for families that are most at risk for infant mortality, safety hazards, and child maltreatment in our area. And we service the community by providing in-home visits by the nurses to individual families to help educate them about parenting skills, about pregnancy, about caring for their child, and identifying their individual needs and addressing those. We serve 22 counties in Missouri, which isn't bad considering we started in one city, and 7 in Middle Tennessee. And we're also looking to expand, so we're open to those offers as well. Go ahead and put that plug in there. The university partner that we worked with is the St. Louis University College for Public Health and Social Justice, which is committed to international as well as St. Louis community-oriented public health events and services. Through teaching, providing services, and research to achieve better health for our communities. The problem that we face is that unintentional childhood injuries is the leading cause of death amongst children. People don't realize that. They think that it's it's murder or SIDS or other things. Unintentional injuries, the TV falling on the child because they're pulling on the cord, things like that that you don't really think about. When you put them all together in mass, they cause a huge mortality for children 0 to 4 years of age. So NFN, Nurses for Newborns, we routinely address these items, these issues in our home visits, but we lacked standardization and we lacked an evidence base for what we were doing, which led to mixed methods amongst our nurses and effectiveness in our families. From family to family, the need was different. So we looked to the university partner, we looked for the evidence base, and we found a program that was developed at the university back in 2002 that helped parents with children 0 to 6 years of age assess their home environment, find the top two issues for safety risk in their family, and then it printed them a nice tailored education packet about how to mitigate the issue. So maybe it was get a baby gate or get a proper car seat, different things like that. It was computer-based, and it was shown to reduce childhood safety events and risks in the homes. So through a wonderful partnership, many of the universities in St. Louis and the hospitals got together and put money into a large pot, which was called CURP, or the Community and University Health Research Partnership. And basically, they funded projects for the community and the university partners to come together as in a real partnership and address issues. So you did a full application, just like you would anything with a research application, but you were required to have co-PIs, one in the university, one in the community. Which was a little bit different than sometimes how that works. So we got together and we wanted to see, okay, so we have this great program that's in the homes, that's got the audience, and we've got this nice software package that helps assess issues, but we needed to know how to merge those together. So we got together and we adapted and integrated that SNS program into our home visitation model, and then we piloted its implementation, feasibility, and effectiveness. I think we ended up with a 279 family participants, which was awesome. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the findings, because this is only half the story. Don't get excited yet. What we found was that the approach can be successful. We could, in a very short period of time, really with just one assessment, we could reduce childhood risks for safety issues in the home by 8%, just by doing one assessment and giving information out. That was key to our organization. It positioned our nurses to advocate in a different way for their clients, to help work through other issues, and it really extended the reach of the injury message. The other thing it did was we learned that you don't have to give stuff to have an effect, which is super important for an agency like ours where we have a stock room. I say we work in half office, half Walmart, because we've got all sorts of diapers and all sorts of stuff. But sometimes those shelves are empty, and we still have to fill the need. So this was very exciting for us to know that even education worked alone. So like I said, that's only half the story. If we stopped here, it's great paper, it's a great presentation, everybody claps and says, yay, yay. But what I often find lacking in the research and the literature is, how did they get there? You know, they gave you the really strict methods, but they didn't give you the nitty-gritty of the day-to-day. So my partner and I, Nancy Weaver at SLU, we talked about, Let's try and come up with four basic lessons that we learned through our partnership together. So I'm going to share that with you today. The very first lesson, plan for change. Consider your resource limitations, competing priorities. Community organizations do not always have consistent resources. Okay, you have people coming and going. You're relying on volunteers. You're generally not always the highest paying act in town either. So sometimes you've got some transitional people that are coming through. In our case, we actually had our community PI about a quarter of the way through left the community organization, as did the project coordinator. And it took 8 months to find proper replacements. So that could have just stalled the project dead in the water. And some of my community partners and people on the project are out there and they're shaking their head, yes, that was not pretty. So this meant that the community partner had to find some people to fill those roles, but the university partner also had to step up and renegotiate and reestablish a new partner, which we're very, very happy that they did, but not all partners would have said that. They would have said, send the $80,000 back, we'll try again another time. We don't have the time now, because we're down to, 4 months of a one-year project? Luckily, we did get an extension, so it was okay. You also have to ensure that you can actually deliver your product. So I've seen this. I've inherited a few projects in the community organization where there was a sort of a sidebar conversation, and they're like, oh, we need 200 people, and we say, oh, yeah, we serve 3,000 a year. Perfect, we're fine. We'll get you your 200 people. And then we go back and we start talking about the limitations of the sample size or the study population, and we realize we've written a check we can't cash, right? So it's really important that as a community organization, you have that long, drawn-out conversation first before you agree to it, and know, be okay with saying no. It's okay to say no. It's okay. You can say no without ruining the relationship. It's okay. Because I guarantee your partner's going to be a lot less happy at the end of the project when they're stuck holding the bag and having to explain to the funder why we couldn't meet our goals. The third thing that's really important for community organizations and their university partners to understand is that the staff people, the field staff that are out there serving the individuals, are advocates for their clients. They're not advocates for research. They didn't get into this to get an aggregate number and a rate. So you have to really look at what your research protocol says and look at what role they're playing and figure out if it's going to accommodate their relationship with the client or it's going to hinder it. And if it's going to have any hindering factors, you better get with your staff and you better talk it through and make them and have them understand why that barrier is in place and understand their point of view as well. We always had nurses that would come in and say, you know, that assessment said that this was their biggest problem, and I don't agree. think it's this other thing. And you know what the nurse wanted to do? She didn't want to work on the thing that the assessment said was a problem. She wanted to work on what she felt was the issue and she and the client had come up with. So we had to work around that and figured out pretty quickly that the top two frequently became the top four, even though we try not to. So you have to be flexible with it, and you have to understand what your repercussions are going to be. Oh, there we go. Okay, lesson two, establish trust and empowerment. Probably the hardest thing to do in the entire partnership. I really recommend that you define the term partnership. We frequently come to the table and speak different languages. I know when I got married, I went on a beach vacation, and my husband's family kept asking if I needed ALO. I didn't know what that was. It was aloe. It's like, that's wrong. And we looked it up, and you can say it either way in the dictionary. Who knew? So you need to really define what partnership means. What does it mean to you as an agency? What does it mean to the university partner? Does it mean they just want you to nod your head at the table? Or does it mean that they really want to work with you and design things with you? And you need to decide what role you want to play in that partnership. Sometimes you just want to be the head nodder. And sometimes you really want to be the pusher of the project. Neither of our groups had any one individual who was assigned to this project full time. So it was very, very important that we assign our tasks and roles and really talk about and negotiate who was going to do what up front, and then be flexible with that, because in the summer, the university is frequently closed. During our fundraising season, we're not closed, but we're definitely trying to keep our doors open. So we're busy with other things. So we had to learn to do a checks and balances system and to check in with each other and make sure that we could keep moving forward. I also like to talk about stepping on toes. I see a lot of people that are like, well, they're the expert. So I don't want to get in their way. Or we assigned that task to them 6 months ago. And that's, it's a passive-aggressive thing. If they don't get it done, that's their own problem. I don't want to step on their toes and make them mad. A successful partnership, just like in marriage, requires stepping on toes. You're going to have to occasionally get in each other's face and negotiate. That's part of building a real partnership and building a real relationship as opposed to just a collaboration. Okay? Our third lesson, I'm going to push the button, okay, is communication. Communication is key, just like in any relationship. If you're dating somebody and you never talk to them, and I like to, if you were here on Saturday for the Learning Institute, you heard how these are dating relationships. It is. You're looking for a spouse, but you might have more than one, but, it's okay. It's illegal. we won't talk about that. if you don't communicate, you're going to find yourself partnerless. You have to also plan to communicate. I hear a lot of people talk about, oh, nobody talks to each other, and blah, 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 blah. And then they want to come back and say, and moan and groan when you have to create a plan to communicate. They're like, oh, can't we just be organic? I love that term, organic, about it. We'll just trust each other. Everybody feels good. We'll hug. It's all good. That's a bad idea. It's a bad idea because if you don't have a plan in place, then nobody's held accountable to each other, right? You don't have to call me because you're just left to your own devices to figure out whether you want to talk about it or not. And I, for one, really hate that. I hate coming to a meeting and finding out that we've agreed to do something and I didn't know about it. And, smiling and nodding my head because I'm trying to be a nice partner, but under the table I'm squeezing their hand, like, what did you do? However, that said, when you establish a plan, fix it if it's broken. If it's not working 3 weeks in, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to continue to try to get your message across when you know they're not listening. It's just like with your husband or your wife or your significant other. If they're not hearing you when you say put your clothes in the basket, I always use this when I was first married. My husband would he'd go in the bedroom, take his clothes off and change and just leave his clothes wherever he lied. So I started just leaving a basket by the front door, by there, and I'm like, just stand in it. And wherever you take it off, we got over it. So that was our, we worked together to work through that. Because you didn't hear me when I kept saying, why are your clothes on the floor? Put them in the basket. There's a basket right there, right next to you. What's the problem? So, we worked through it. Communication works both ways, though. If you're having a one-sided conversation, both parties are going to get angry. The person who's doing all the talking is gonna come back into their shell. They're gonna give up and quit talking to you. And the person who's doing all the listening and not talking is gonna get fed up with not having a voice. So it is a two-way street. A partnership really, it doesn't just mean that the university has to be has to lay down and let the community run over them, but it also means that the community partner can't lay down and let the university roll over them. You have to work together. Be transparent. You have to lay your dirty laundry out. You know, back to the dating. You meet each other's families, just like that. And you meet the crazy uncles and the crazy aunts and cousins that, you know, nobody's really sure about. That's the same thing with the community partnership. You have to bring the university partner, the research partner, into your world, into your home and into your family, and let them see the good, the bad, and the ugly. Just like the university partner has to be straight with you and let you come into the university and see what they're dealing with. You're going to work a lot better and communicate better that way if you understand each other. I only have 1 minute left, but I only have one more point. So, okay. The last thing, which is probably the foundation for all of these things, is to enjoy and expand the relationship. If you don't enjoy each other, you're going to divorce, right? It's over. You have to find ways to enjoy and get to know each other. Community partners are individual based. We are working with humans. We like the eye-to-eye participation. We don't think in aggregate all the time. So we really need to enjoy each other and get to know each other. So we call it chicken in a hot pot. So there's a restaurant near us that has this wonderful dish called chicken in a hot pot. So we go for chicken in a hot pot is what we do. And we sit down and we talk about our lives and our families and understand where we're coming from on a human level and establish that enjoyment of being together. We also expand our partnership. Nancy Weaver sits on, my agency has developed a research advisory council where we bring, instead of us sitting on community boards, we bring the researchers to us as a board and ask them to give us their ideas and tell them what our issues are and basically, we pick their brains versus them picking ours. Nancy sits on that free of charge. She doesn't get paid to do it. She does it whether she's working at the university or not. And I go free of charge, and I speak to her classes about working in community health and what it's like in the real world once you get out of the classroom setting. That's worked really well for us because now we know our funding has ended, but we're still meeting, and we're still talking about it, and we're still growing the project. So I don't think that would have happened had we not taken the time to get to know each other, to talk it through. I know about her kids. She knows about my kids. My kid, I only have one, but he seems like four. So anyway, that's all I really had to share with you today. I appreciate your time, and I wish you all the best of luck.